Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks to media maven Egypt Sherrod about her popular HGTV series, Flipping Virgins. She also opens up about the inspiration behind her book, Keep Calm, It's Just Real Estate, and her upcoming Egypt Sherrod home collection. Upfront is also celebrating Black Music Month with an exclusive interview with the daughters of music legends James Brown, Millie Jackson, and Isaac Hayes. Dr. Yama Brown, Keisha Jackson, and Heather Hayes talk candidly about their superstar parents and their enduring musical legacies. We'll also be playing songs from these iconic artists all throughout the show. But first, here's this week's casting buzz and entertainment news with Reva Blue.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Central Casting is currently accepting submissions for real street musicians for the upcoming film, Mary Lou. The candidates will be photo-selected by the film's directors and must own their instruments. The project is looking for men and women of all ethnicities and over the age of 18. Candidates must be available for multiple days throughout June and July, including weekdays and weekends, and must also be available to work in both Fayetteville and downtown Atlanta. Fittings will begin this month. If you fit the above description, please send your name, phone number, sizes, and a current photo of you and your instrument to MaryLou@centralcasting.com with street musician in the subject line of the email. In other related entertainment news, VH1's newest scripted series, Daytime Divas, debuts this Monday, June 5th at 10 p.m. and stars Vanessa Williams and Tashina Arnold. The series is based on Star Jones's best-selling book, Satan's Sisters, and follows a fictitious long-running talk show titled The Lunch Hour that is hosted by five female co-hosts. The show will also include appearances by Patti LaBelle, Eve, Tasha Smith, McKinley Freeman, Lala Anthony, and Broadway star Norm Lewis. See the official trailer at WCLK.com. That's this week's casting buzz and entertainment news. I'm Reva Blue.
Watch me! Watch me! I got it! Watch me! I got it! Hey! I got something that makes me wanna shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got soul! I'm super bad. I got soul. And I'm super bad.
Hey y'all, this is Logan Browning from Netflix's Dear White People, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My first guest is the definition of a triple threat. She is a former radio personality, a best-selling book author, and is now the executive producer and host of HGTV's popular series, Flipping Virgins. I'm talking about none other than Egypt Sherrod. The real estate expert turned TV star has made Atlanta her new home and stopped by the Upfront Studios to chat about her show, her NAACP Image Award-nominated book, and her forthcoming home collection. She also opens up about her unforgettable interview with the godfather of soul, James Brown. So sit back and relax as we step into Egypt's world.
Well, good morning, Egypt Sherrod, and welcome to Upfront. How are you?
Well, hello, honey bunny. This is wonderful.
Yeah,
congratulations
thank
on
you.
The show.
Thank you. You know, I have to say this publicly because you are, and I tell people this all the time, you are the most consistent celebrity that I've ever met.
What does that mean?
That means that you're always Egypt all the time. Always smiling, always giving hugs,
aww,
always saying hello.
God.
As a matter of fact, you cannot enter a room, and if you're there, and if you know us, we cannot pass by you because you'll be like, "Hey, don't act like you don't know who I am."
Oh no, no. See, because you gotta understand, my family, the way we are, we're just loving. I was raised like that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a friend or you're a friend of a friend, come get a piece of fried chicken.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the way we are, and I think. Coming up in this business, sometimes when people attain a certain level of success, they become untouchable or think they have to be untouchable or have that air about them. And I make a conscious choice to make sure people know, I still love you. You can come get a piece of chicken at my house.
Well, I appreciate that. And after we're done, well, I'll definitely make sure I stop by.
I put sugar in my recipe. I don't know. Do you like sugar in your chicken?
You know what? I put sugar in my spaghetti. So.
Do you? Oh, I'm with you. I do the same. Right. Yeah.
So you went from property virgins to now flipping virgins. Does this ever get old for you?
Real estate never gets old for me. I love it. It's my second wind, my next chapter after broadcasting, even though I still have my feet in it because I'm on TV. But I'm talking about after working in radio for almost 20 years, it was a surprise for me because I was following a path that God just kind of put out there for me. I never wanted to work in radio. And then fast forward 2 decades.
I worked
everywhere. I was in the top market. And then I said, well, what brings me joy? What do I want to do for the rest of my life? What would I do if I could get up every morning? I didn't get paid for it. And I love teaching people and empowering people about home ownership and financial wealth, you know, empowerment, how to make their money work for them. And it turned into sometimes when we allow ourselves to be used by God, just be a vessel. Use me however you want to use me. That's how he promotes us. And so it never gets old. After 235 episodes of Property Virgins, I did feel it was time for me to shed another layer, sort of peel back the skin like an onion, and show how I got started in real estate, which was flipping houses.
Which, you know, at one point was like the boom here in Atlanta. Like, you know, you would see people out and it's like, hey, this is what I'm kind of doing on the side. And it was just bam. And then all of a sudden, you know, we had the crash. But now things are changing. I think there's a new wind here in Atlanta. So one of my questions I was going to ask, what makes Atlanta that city that so many people, you know, we always tease about Atlanta's full. So what? Don't come.
I became that person, full. By the way. You know, I moved here 5.5 years ago,
right,
and people were telling me, we don't want y'all Yankees, but really they meant it. And now I'm like, we're good.
Right.
We're good.
Yeah.
This is home.
What is it about Atlanta that so many folks are buying property here?
Well, let me take you back a bit. My husband and I drove to Atlanta from New York when we moved here. My daughter was 2 weeks old. I had just had a C-section, and so I couldn't fly. So we got the real enter Atlanta experience, you know, where you see the big peach.
Yeah.
On the side of the highway, and we had to stop at the rest stop, and I got my first cup of sweet tea. I'm talking about real.
Real sweet.
Iced tea. I just got back from L.A. on a red eye, and I asked for some iced tea out there, and I forgot that's not the South. Don't try to bring this iced tea to me. This is not iced tea. So that was, you know, and then when you start eating at the restaurants and you say, I don't know what they put on this food, but everything I pick up in Atlanta is just a whole different type of level of good.
Yeah.
And when people smile at you, well, not in the industry, but in general, when people smile at you, they smile from their hearts here. For the first time in my life, it felt like the Twilight Zone. When we moved into a house, our neighbors came over and actually baked a tub of cookies for us to welcome us to the neighborhood. Now, mind you, we moved from New York City, and in New York,
you don't
know your neighbor after you live next to him for 15 years. They just put the shades down. They think Jehovah's Witnesses are at the door. They don't want to answer. You're like, hello, be neighborly.
Yeah.
So for us, we realized after 2 months of being here that this was home. It was home. It was where we wanted to raise our family. I can go visit any place else in the world, get a little apartment on the side, but this is home for me. And I think that a lot of people, when they come here, they feel the same thing. You know, and not to mention, we are a big city. We're now the 8th largest city in the country. So if you compare us to Chicago, New York, San Francisco, L.A., you also see the cost of living in those cities. It's astronomical. You can't survive on it. I mean, I think they said in New York now, poverty is below the $100,000. Like, right. So if you earn less than $100,000, you're considered to be living in poverty. So exactly. Pick your jaw up off the floor.
Yeah.
Pick it up off the floor. So my point is now, you can come to Atlanta and have a great quality of life. Actually have a backyard with some trees in it, okay?
Yeah.
No, that's a real luxury. You don't realize it. And you can just have a wonderful, you know, experience living and still have the city life, right? So there's balance here. I believe that's the attraction. And over the last 36 months, we've had 24 companies move their offices or, you know, corporate offices or manufacturing, you know, companies here. So they're creating jobs. And where there are jobs, people will come. So all around the world, not just the country, all around the world, people are saying, huh, this is a big city. It's now become the film capital. It's all the tech companies are moving there now as well. The car companies are starting to move to Atlanta. There are jobs, and I can get a 5-bedroom, 3,000 square foot house for $350,000. Where did they do that?
Yeah.
So that is the appeal. It's hard to find. I think we take it for granted. Those who have only ever known Atlanta really take it for granted.
Now, in addition to the real estate, being on TV, being a media personality, radio personality, you're also a book author, and you released a bestseller 2 years ago, Keep Calm, It's Just Real Estate, Your No-Stress Guide to Buying a Home. What was the, was there a story or was there an experience that you had that made you say, you know what, I need to write a book?
You want to know my politically correct answer?
No, I want to know the real answer.
Okay, Egypt, do you want to tell the real answer today? Yes, here it is. I was balancing working on the radio station, running my real estate business, and filming a television show all while I had a 1.5-year-old baby. And I was trying to answer everybody's emails. Now, mind you, they would watch me on television on Property Virgins and then go online, Google me, and email me. And I would every day answer go into my email box, and it was too much for one person to handle. It was a full-time job answering the emails. But I'm of the mind that if you can take the time to email me, I better take the time to email you back. I feel like it's karma. Yeah. If you don't, then somewhere your blessings are going to stop.
You're going to lose a viewer.
Yeah, something like that. So I would try to answer all these emails, and I just couldn't. So I said, if I write a book and put it in there, I'll have an auto reply that says, for any questions, you can pick up my book. And yeah, it worked. And I had no idea all the blessings that would come with that book. I mean, I literally wrote it in my bedroom closet on the floor when I was hiding from my children.
Wow.
Hiding.
And then NAACP Image Award nomination. I mean, you've been able to travel with this and promote this. I mean, so it's been just really, really good for you.
It really is. And so, again, I'm going to go back to what we said in the beginning, which is when you just allow yourself to be used as a vessel. You know, yes, we have our dreams. We have all the things we want to accomplish in life. But at some point, we have to let... And yes, I'm. Everything goes back to God for me because I'm looking at your face like, what's she about to say? But at some point, we do have to recognize that it's beyond material things. It's beyond our selfishness. You know, selfishness. It's got to be some selflessness in there, and we have to allow ourselves to be used for a higher purpose of service, being of service to other people. And so, you know, think about it. My life went from, like I said, working in radio for all those years, you know, the glitz, the glamour, the red carpets, the celebrities and all the follow, all of that, to I live a very different life now. And I love it. I work with real people with real dreams, real hearts, like that say thank you. You know, say thank you, Carl. Appreciate the little things. And every day I'm being of service to them and helping them make a difference for their family.
Yeah. So I'm going to put you on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
When is the Egypt Sherrod home collection coming out? Where's the comforter, the pillows?
It's in the works.
Yeah?
It really is in the works, from your lips to God's ears, because I just got back from L.A. from a meeting about that. Didn't I just tell you I got back on a red eye?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's
because I'm thinking, I'm like, when I was putting together my questions, I was like, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I want an Egypt Sherrod pillow or a fork. I need a plate.
I'll go to Home Goods and buy you one right now, but you got to wait at least another year.
To eat that sweet chicken. Right. I want an Egypt Sherrod plate to eat that sweet chicken.
Well, it's coming. All of that is next. But, you know, there definitely, for me, there was a transition that needed to be had, a rebranding, if you will. For a lot of people who did not know that, I even did real estate all of those years, you know, over 15 years. They just knew me in one capacity, and the world likes to put you in a box.
Right.
So sometimes you have to just check the box off and say, I'm done with that chapter. And I went through a rebranding process. And I feel like people know me for what it is that I do and what I'm focused on now, what I'm about now.
Yeah.
And now I'm ready to expand that brand. But there, you know, you can't put the cart before the horse.
Okay. So this is June. We're at the beginning of June here. This is Black Music Month. So considering that you had been on the air all those years, give me one interview that you'll never forget. And I think I already know what that one is.
What are you going to say?
I already know.
No, you tell me. What do you think? It's
Prince.
Yes, I will never forget that. Ever, ever, ever. But I've told that story so many times okay. that people probably heard. And if you haven't, Prince came, showed up in the studio, shocked me. I crawled underneath the console because I couldn't believe it was him. And the next thing I knew, I was singing on stage with him in Madison Square Garden. True story.
Yeah.
I just told the Oprah story on Steve Harvey's TV show, so I'm not going to tell that again.
Okay.
I'm going to tell the James Brown story.
Okay.
So I was working as a correspondent for Access Hollywood for a short period of time. James Brown was very ill, but, you know, he was still out there. And, you know, you could tell he was fading and we didn't have much time with him left sort of thing. And I didn't realize the enormity of that moment, being in a room, just me, just James Brown, the way you are. I mean, this is the godfather
right.
of soul,
right.
okay?
Right.
I had to call my dad on a cell phone because I knew he wouldn't believe that I was sitting across from James Brown having a conversation. Now, I barely understood anything James said, but this was James Brown. And in the middle of the interview, every now and again, he would just bust out with a, hey! I mean, this is really him. You know, and then I would crack up, and he loved entertaining. That was, you know, the very fabric of his being. And, you know, I just had an opportunity to sit with the godfather of soul. And mind you, that wound up being the last interview before he died.
Wow.
I had no idea. Like I said, the enormity of it. Yeah. And I can kind of say, wow, I did that. I really did that. I sat there with the godfather. So when I listen to James Brown songs now, or, you know, when you watch the James Brown movie, by the way, I thought that should have been nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah,
who
yeah.
was the actor that
was,
played him?
Chadwick Boseman.
Oh, my goodness. He's so talented. Yeah. And he nailed it. And I think he got snubbed. I was really upset about that. But nevertheless, when I watched that movie, it was so surreal to say he was like God to so many people back then. I know to my parents because that was their age. He was the Michael Jackson of that day that I sat in the room with him and had a conversation. He was like, little girl, let me tell you something. And I don't know what the rest of what he said, but I just smiled and just kind of did that.
Well, Egypt, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to stop by Upfront, and much success to you and the show Flipping Virgins. And that comes on, just to remind our viewers.
Just so you know, we just finished season 2, and so now it's in reruns. You may catch it any time of day on HGTV because they're rerunning it over and over. And we did fantastic, so much that before the season ended, they just renewed us for a third season.
Yay!
And I'm one of the executive producers on the show, so that's really fulfilling to wear those shoes. And we'll be filming another season right here in Atlanta.
All right. Thank you so much, and best of luck to you. And I'll be over.
Thank you.
To get my plate of sweet chicken.
Yes, come on over. Get some chicken, and I gotta try your spaghetti.
Right,
I'll let you know if it's good.
Okay.
Who's the black private dick that's a sex machine to all the chicks? You damn right.
This is Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My last guests are the offspring of music icons James Brown, Millie Jackson, and Isaac Hayes. I'm talking about Dr. Yama Brown, Keisha Jackson, and Heather Hayes, better known as the official Soul Sisters. The trio stopped by Upfront to talk exclusively about their parents and what it was like growing up in the shadows of greatness. The ladies also open up about the advice they received from them and their enduring musical legacies. This is an interview that you'll only hear on WCLK.
Well, good morning, ladies, and welcome to Upfront. How is everyone this morning?
Good, good, good.
Good.
Yeah.
How are you?
When I tell you, I am so excited to see your faces here in the studio. Yama, you and I have been talking about this ever since, last year at the Mayor's Mass Ball?
Yeah.
Wanted to get you guys here in the studio to talk about your parents. Mm-hmm. And gosh, it's just timing. It's all about timing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Keisha, I got to say this, because I've said this publicly on social media, but now I'm going to say this over the air. I just want to thank you because you were actually one of my very first interviews for my website. You were actually the first story I posted.
I remember that.
Wow. On my website 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah. So look at us now.
It's awesome. Yeah. And then you came and covered my workshop.
Yeah, your workshop. Yeah. So really good stuff happening. Yeah. So let's jump right into this. We're right in the very beginnings of Black Music Month. It's mm-hmm. June 3rd, and we're so excited to talk about your amazing parents. I think the best way to talk about Black Music Month is to recall the lives, the people that brought us this great music. And right. so we're here to talk about Isaac Hayes, James Brown, and the one and only Miss Millie Jackson. So let's start from the very beginning. When did you know that your parents were a big deal? Heather?
I think I was 11, 12, maybe. I think before then, it was just kind of like you really didn't understand what was going on. Like, I knew his job was music, but it's like, eh, so what? And then I think when I started to become a preteen and a teenager, that's when it was clear that he was a big deal. So that was probably the first time. Just word of mouth from other people, because I don't think I'd seen him when I was much smaller, but that was too small to understand what was going on. So probably 11 or 12.
Yeah,
I would say early. Dad did not let us not know that he was a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know who I am? Everybody around the world know who I am.
Like, oh my goodness, are you serious right now? Mm.
But I mean, I think early I knew that he was famous, but I agree with Heather. It wasn't until later on that I really knew the impact, you know, of
that this what he had done for me.
Because I'm up until then, it's just dad.
Yeah.
And I would say the same for me. It was probably early teens, you know. It may have been different for me than the other ladies because the kids my age weren't listening to my mother's music. Mm. So it was their parents that said, oh, you go to school with who's that? So it wasn't like kids were going to school saying, oh, I'm friends with Millie Jackson's daughter. They didn't know who Millie Jackson was anyway because they weren't allowed to be in the room when the music was being played. So for me, I mean, I knew it was something because we were living in Teaneck, New Jersey, and I knew that she was someone. This is crazy. She's going to be so pissed, boy, when I say I knew that she was special when the Isley Brothers and Ashford and Simpson and everybody would always come to the house because they were all friends of hers. And so I was like, well, they're friends with you, so you must be somebody. I based her, you know, her thing off of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it really wasn't until I got probably about 16 or 17 that I understood the impact that she had on music.
Yeah.
I began to appreciate it. I'll say that because before then, child, I didn't. You know, whatever.
Now, both you and Heather are performers, so you followed in the footsteps of your parents. So, what advice did they give you as performers, not as Millie Jackson mom or Isaac Hayes dad, but Isaac Hayes the performer and Millie Jackson the singer?
Don't do it. That's what my mother said. She didn't want me to do it. She fought me tooth and nail about it. She was determined that I wasn't going to do it. She was actually the reason why I decided to go to school for law. She was like, you're not doing this. And the more she protested, the more I was like, well, wait a minute. Push back.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of started sneaking around and doing it. And then, but her, she never really gave me any advice because she was like, I don't care what you say. You ain't going to do it no way. So I didn't really get a lot of advice from her on how to handle it well because she was determined that I wasn't going to be doing it at all.
Yeah.
I don't think, my dad didn't want me to do it either, I don't think. He wasn't as verbal as Keisha's mom, but clearly he didn't really want me to do it. He would support me in it. And I remember when I was 13 years old, I did a talent show. I wanted to be in the talent show and I wanted to sing. And so he created a track for me. My mom was like, you need to get her a track. So she, and everybody else was like, sheet music. So he brings this track. It had modulations and
Honey,
changes.
It was Shaft too.
Yes,
right.
My mom was like, "Isaac, she's 12."
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah, that's right.
And he literally had to sing me through the song. Like, what is that? Like, it was bells and timpanis and horns. It was a lot. And so when I think he did it because I wanted to do it. But there was never any like, do this when you get in the business until I became older. And I just remember him basically saying, "If you're not going to do it, no one else is going to do it for you."
Yeah.
Period. And I remember him specifically saying that and like, be you. Your voice is this way. Sing, you know, what's best for your voice.
Yeah.
And that was what he told me.
Wow. Now, what is probably something about your parents that we would have no
but
clue.
Can I say something
oh, go
really
ahead.
Quick?
Uh-huh.
But Yama.
Yama, I knew you was going to say
Yama's quiet.
Yama had a single out.
I used to dance for her.
Heather was one of my dancers.
Okay, so do you sing? Because I didn't.
No.
No. Okay.
No. I do have a single that
okay.
I did.
Okay.
But my dad encouraged me to go education. Yeah. You know, he was like, I mean, not because I even had an interest in going into music,
right.
But he was like, somebody got to be a doctor. You know, we got to have, everybody can't be singing and all this. And plus, for me, I tell them all the time, I commend y'all because never did I want to be like, oh, you're the daughter of, or let me compare or all this. Because I was like, there is no comparison. There right. will never be another, you know, like yeah. him. And so for me, and it was very nerve wracking. To be in the studio and for him to come in, I was like, oh my God. Because I redid, I got the feeling.
Okay.
So it was a little interesting. I was in pharmacy school when I did it, and he made it super hard for me to do. I tried to, we had a gig like at Georgia Southern. He made all, it was just a mess. I was like, oh,
I
can't do this no more.
So it's almost like when you hear parents, you know, sometimes folks ask, you know, celebrities, hey, would you want your kids in? And a lot mm-hmm. of times they'll say, yeah. You know, I'll let them. So, but in your case, it was like, don't even
no,
think about it.
No, absolutely
yeah.
not.
Yeah. What is your fondest memory when you think of your parents? What automatically immediately comes to mind?
I would say my dad's laughter. His laughter was loud and boisterous and funny.
I would say jokes.
My fondest memory, I think it was when I was in college. I went to school at the University of Bridgeport in Connecticut. And it was those weekends that my mother would come up and she would just come. We'd go to lunch. It was just regular. And those moments were really rare because it was her on the college campus. So she didn't have to worry about, no, like nobody knew, nobody cared. And it was just me and her time. Yeah. Those are probably the best ones for me.
Favorite song?
By our parents?
By your parents.
Heard so good.
I'm not complaining what you're doing, you see. Cause this pain you're feeling is ooh, so good to me. Don't you know that it hurts so good? Don't you know that it hurts so good?
I always liked that song. It you know, it's so opposite of what she would say. You know, basically, she's like, you can treat me however, I'm good with it because it hurts so good. Child, please. But she's saying, it's so convincing. Like, to this day, it is it's my favorite song by her.
I would probably say Man's World because I just like to hear him perform it.
Mm.
Yeah.
When you see other people, because that seems to be the one song that a lot of people like to perform.
Yeah,
so when
they
you
do.
See other people perform that, what? No, yeah.
It makes me mad when I see other people
yeah,
perform
you just, it. Yeah, you just can't do it. Although Christina did a great job at the Grammys. Some people can really do a really good job, but you know, yeah. Look, she like, I don't want to hear. But I mean, it's nothing like Dad doing it. You
yeah.
know,
it'll never be nothing like that. So
yeah, I would say Man's World.
I would say it's changed over the years, but honestly, for multiple reasons, I would say Shaft. And that's just because, you know, the perspective of knowing where he was when he created it, it's just like he couldn't really read music when he created that. That's just
that's incredible.
Shocking to me that he couldn't really, and he had just learned some years before that, before he composed that, and just all the elements that he added into it was clearly, you know, what he liked. Mm-hmm. And so, and also it's just, it's history making.
Yeah.
It's first African-American man to win for an, you know, movie score,
yeah.
an Oscar. So that to me is, that's just something that, you know, the legacy will always have. And so I'm really proud of him for that.
Now your parents have all been featured on TV1's Unsung. What was that experience like? Because I can only imagine you get so many people pulling on you, wanting to talk about your family, your mom's music, your dad's dance moves, the, you know, Shaft, like how many times, you know.
Yeah.
But does that ever get old? Like
yes.
Yeah.
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 Yes.
Got old at like five.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the unsung thing was nice for me. I'm very guarded. Very guarded. So when people start asking me about my mother, I go into it assuming that you're trying to get something. I mean, I just, you know, I'm just guarded. You know, don't come over here with that. You know, so I'm not going to freely answer any questions. If you're bold enough to ask me, then I will likely tell you. But most things that people want to know about my mother, they're not bold enough to ask because I put up a thing like, don't do it.
Yeah.
Just don't do it. For me, it started early on because I get men, like grown, nasty men. Today, that would be like, ooh.
Oh, absolutely not.
Girl, like like right now it could happen.
Yeah.
Girl, you look just, I said, don't do that. It's like, wait a minute. Like, do you realize that you're talking about my mother? And you're like looking up in the air and you're kind of dreaming and you're like, don't do that. Don't do that. That will get you slapped like really, really fast. Yeah. So that got old for me because I felt like, people never, you're not, this is my mother. Like, you're not paying attention to the facts that, okay, you might see her as a sex symbol. And yes, she did some suggestive stuff. She had some album covers that made you go, but still you're talking to her daughter. Yeah. Like, you have to know that there's a time and place for all of that. And so when people in interviews would say, what did it feel like growing up Millie Jackson's daughter? I've never been anybody else's daughter. So I can't really, I don't know. This was regular for me. The same way you felt like with your parents is the same way I felt like with my parents.
Yeah. And it's got to be different, too, when we talk about this, because it's her mom and
right.
it's our dad.
Yeah. So dad is a little different.
Yeah, it's a whole different dynamic.
Yeah.
Last question. What is the legacy from your perspective of your parents? Everyone kind of chimes in on what they think is the legacy of your parents, but you as coming from them, being around them, living with them, knowing them intimately, what is their ultimate legacy?
I mean, my dad, I feel like for him, I mean, because we live it. We still, you know, try to push for everything about his legacy and still work to keep him in the forefront. But Black and Proud was such a big and definitive moment, you know, in history for him and for so many people that I feel like his legacy, it's not just Black, but his legacy is about uplifting, is about saying you should be proud of whoever you are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And for him, it was about, you know, making somebody feel, you know, better about themselves, making sure you know that you don't have to necessarily follow in somebody's footsteps. You can be your own person. You can stand on your own two feet. I mean, believe it or not, education was really, really big for him, even though he didn't get a formal education, didn't go past the seventh grade, you know, all of that. But just him in general, I would say that it's all about, you know, knowing who you are, knowing where you come from, always giving back, and just being grounded, being rooted like that.
I mean, I would say it's multifaceted too. Like, it's definitely about the music, but I think for him in relationship to kids, because some of the things he would do was he would take musical instruments to really small towns around where he was from, which was Tennessee, and deliver just instruments to the kids that couldn't afford it. So it was definitely, you know, music in kids' lives because it saved his. Like, he was extremely poor. And also education, for sure, because he didn't take his education, but I mean, he was going to school with, you know, cardboard in the bottom of his shoes and eating out of trash cans, and he still was able to succeed. So I think just, you know, giving back to those less fortunate, because music basically saved his life in education.
I think education is probably the common denominator across the board. My mother didn't finish high school, but then once she started singing, she went to night school to get her degree, her diploma. And she was determined to do that. By that time, she had moved from Georgia to New York, and she did it on her own. She was just like, this is what I'm going to do, because up to that point, no one had had a full high school education in her family. So education, definitely. But my mother is, always has been and is, it's all about whatever you do, do it all the way or don't do it at all. You know, and just because you're a woman, you are no less. You know, you are more powerful in many ways, and you can do whatever you want to do. Like, don't let barriers stop you. You know what I mean? She couldn't be played on radio, but she was popular. And so when she did her music, she found ways to say suggestive things without actually saying it so she could be played on the radio. And she's incredibly creative in that way. And find a way to make it work. That's it. You can do it. Find a way to make it work. Yeah. And don't come over here crying about it.
And I think also, like, when you say education, like, just their stories, it's so different from artists now, because you're talking about three people who probably didn't have a whole lot
right
to work with. And so it is, you get it done. Like, they got it done. There's no excuses. Just get it done. Yeah. You know, and give back, because they really came from nothing.
That's right.
And became legends at this point. So that, to me, an education, because they weren't afforded necessarily this great education, especially back then as African-American people with, you know, no money. Yeah. So, and that's the thing that's so different to me, is the sacrifice, and they made something huge out of absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Agreed. Well, ladies, thank you so very much for stopping by. I know
thank
it was a,
you. Thank you.
A struggle getting over here, but so appreciate you guys stopping by and sharing these amazing moments about your parents, Isaac Hayes, James Brown, and Millie Jackson, and sharing that for Black Music Month. So we really do appreciate that. And how can our followers follow you, our listeners, I should say, follow you on social media?
Well, first, you can follow me at Heather Hayes on Instagram, on IG, Heather H. Hayes on Twitter, and Heather Hayes on Facebook, but Official Soul Sisters, which is our radio show that we have on IG and Facebook.
Yeah, Daughter of Soul on IG, Twitter, Yama Brown on Facebook.
Keisha Jackson everywhere, K-E-I-S-H-A Jackson on everywhere.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's show. I'd really like to thank my guests, Egypt Sherrod, and the Official Soul Sisters, Dr. Yama Brown, Keisha Jackson, and Heather Hayes. I would also like to thank my engineer, Mark Angel, and you. Please join us next Saturday, June 10th at 9 a.m. for another exciting edition of Upfront. Happy Saturday, Atlanta. If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.